You're listening to Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM and Waveform Radio. I'm your host, Elizabeth Lojudis, welcoming you to the second hour of our premiere broadcast. I'm an environmental educator and natural sound enthusiast, and I'm taking you on a bioacoustic journey this evening. Echolocation will be broadcast once each season, and for this springtime show, we're listening to the Dawn Chorus at Wave Farm Study Center in Accra. And this was shared as part of the Reveil broadcast, which plays dawn sounds from all over the world during a 24-hour period each spring. This year, Reveil was April 30th to May 1st, so this soundscape was recorded at dawn on May 1st. At the end of hour one, we heard the sound recordings of bioacoustician Bernie Krause, accompanied by compositions by Richard Blackford that were performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales. And this was performed as part of an album called The Great Animal Orchestra, and we also heard Krause reading from his book of the same name. Krause's interdisciplinary approach brings music into the study of bioacoustics, and that's where we are going to focus our inquiry this hour. The Great Animal Orchestra is a contemporary piece of music, but Bernie Krause was an early bioacoustician who took an ecological approach to recording soundscapes, rather than just highlighting individual species, as we typically hear in sound libraries. And one of Krause's contemporaries in this holistic approach to natural sound recording is R. Murray Schafer. Drawing on John Cage's concepts of the whole world as a composition, Schafer was a pioneer in the field of acoustic ecology and soundscape studies. Schafer is a composer and musician who taught at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia during the 1970s, and that's when he and his colleagues developed the World Soundscape Project. Schafer coined the word soundscape to identify sounds that, I'm going to quote him here, describe a place, a sonic identity, a sonic memory, but always a sound that is pertinent to a place. So a soundscape consists of natural sounds, animal sounds, and sounds created by humans. And a soundscape can also be an audio recording or a performance of a piece of music or art that includes found sound or is evocative of an acoustic environment. And Bernie Krause refined Schafer's soundscape into three main sources: the geophony, which are non-biological sounds, such as the wind in the trees or water flowing in a stream; the biophony, which are sounds made by wildlife, insects, and plants; and the anthropophony, which are sounds generated by humans. Unlike Krause, Schafer has not produced albums that mix natural sounds with music, but his compositions draw inspiration from the natural world. Schafer suggests that we listen to the soundscape as if it were a musical composition. For example, we're listening to Schafer's String Quartet No. 2, or Waves, in the background right now. The rhythmic structure of this piece is based on the intervals at which ocean waves crest. So let's take a closer listen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
A contemporary of Schaeffer's, who was also influenced by John Cage, is Anaya Lockwood, who is a composer and academic who focused on environmental sounds for a portion of her career. Lockwood taught at Vassar College, and at one point in her career, she composed sound maps of rivers. And we are going to listen to an excerpt from her sound map of the Housatonic River. That was an excerpt from Sound Map of the Housatonic River by Anaya Lockwood, and you're listening to Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lojudis. We just took a deep dive into a watery soundscape, and as listeners, we're part of that soundscape, even if we aren't sitting on a riverbank. Part of Amory Schaeffer's definition of a soundscape includes the listener's perception of sound. Schaeffer recognized that how sound is perceived mediates the listener's relationship with the environment. And excessive anthropogenic noise disrupts acoustic ecology, but careful listening in quiet spaces reveal many hidden details of the world. In the next part of the show, we'll be focusing on a genre called deep listening, which was pioneered by Pauline Oliveros, who is a composer, an accordionist, and a contemporary of Anais Lockwood and Schaefer. Oliveros founded the Deep Listening Institute, and there's now a Deep Listening Center at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy. And rather than recording natural sound, Oliveros interacts with environments to create a resonance that is beyond music, in my opinion. She has performed in giant cisterns and cathedrals, and she has defined soundscape as all of the waveforms faithfully transmitted to our audio cortex by the ear and its mechanisms. So let's listen to Oliveros in her own words. This is a TED Talk that took place in Indianapolis in 2015, and the talk is entitled The Difference Between Hearing and Listening.
Why would three musicians squeeze through a manhole-sized opening with their instruments to climb down a 14-foot ladder into a dark underground cistern? For us, echo and reverberation can be fascinating. Consider what fun it is to sing in the shower. Perhaps it brings out our inner Narcissus. The balloon pop you heard represents the remarkable 45-second reverberation time in the Dan Harpool Cistern in Port Townsend, Washington State, where the three of us played the music that is sounding now. The meme, deep listening, occurred to me after our recording in the cistern. We had come there to experience the unusual sound. Recording was really an afterthought that resulted in the release of Deep Listening by New Albion Records in 1989. And that was the birth of Deep Listening Band with Stuart Dempster, Paniotis, and myself. In order to play in the cistern environment, we had to learn to listen in a new way. We had no plan, no written score, and had no discussion beforehand. We simply improvised, played, and learned that the cistern was playing with us. We had to respect the sound that was coming back to us from the cistern walls and include it in our musical sensibility. All this was unspoken and simply experienced by the three of us. We chose Deep Listening as a title for the CD and band. We were all incurable punsters, and we created the music so deep underground. The practice of deep listening, as it has developed, explores the difference between hearing and listening. The ear hears, the brain listens, the body senses vibrations. Listening is a lifetime practice that depends on accumulated experiences with sound. Listening can be focused to detail or open to the entire field of sound. Listening is a mysterious process that is not the same for everyone. Humans have developed consensual agreements on the interpretation of sound waves delivered to the brain by the ears. Languages are such agreements. To hear and to listen have a symbiotic relationship with a questionable common usage. We know more about hearing than listening. Scientists can measure what happens in the ear. Measuring listening is another matter, as it involves subjectivity. We confuse hearing with listening. For example, music schools program ear training classes, but the ear can't be trained. What really happens is a cultivation of musical mind. I differentiate to hear and to listen. To hear is the physical means that enables perception. To listen is to give attention to what is perceived, both acoustically and psychologically. Hearing turns a certain range of vibrations into perceptible sounds. When listening, there is a constant interplay with the perception of the moment compared with remembered experience. Listening, or the interpretation of sound waves, then, is subject to time delays. Sometimes, what is heard is interpreted anywhere from milliseconds to many years later or never. So what did we learn from the cistern? Learning to listen to the cistern space led to listening more closely to all performance spaces and beyond. Each space is different and couples with instruments and voices to sound differently. Performance space is as important as voices and instruments. Formation of Deep Listening Band led to deep listening retreats, workshops, lectures, concerts the world over, and now to the new Center for Deep Listening at Rensselaer that hosts scholars and conferences on deep listening. Deep listening came from 14 feet underground to higher education. So what is deep listening? Acoustic space is where time and space merge as they are articulated by sound. Deep has to do with complexity, boundaries, or edges beyond ordinary or habitual understandings. The subject is too deep for me, or she is a deep thinker. A subject that is too deep surpasses one's present understanding, or has too many unknown parts to grasp easily. A deep thinker defies stereotypical knowing, and it may take either a long time or never to understand her. Deep, coupled with listening, or deep listening for me, is learning to expand perception of sounds to include the whole space-time continuum of sound, encountering the vastness and complexities as much as possible. Simultaneously, one ought to be able to target a sound or sequence of sounds, perceiving the beginning, middle, and end of them as a focus. Such focus and expansion means that one is connected to the whole of the environment and beyond. My practice is to listen to everything all the time and remind myself when I am not listening. I invite you to take a moment now to notice what you are hearing and to expand your listening to continually include more. The level of awareness of soundscape brought about by deep listening can lead to the possibility of shaping the chaotic sounds of technology and of urban environments and machinery. Deep listening designers, engineers, and city planners could enhance the quality of life along with artists, sound artists, composers, musicians, and all people who care about sound. We loved playing in the Dan Harpole cistern, but we couldn't really invite an audience to join us there. For 25 years, we wished for a way to bring the cistern acoustics to concert venues. On my 80th birthday, this wish was granted. My RPI colleague, acoustician Jonas Brasch, had measured the acoustical properties of the cistern and with his students created a portable software simulation of the space. My birthday concert in May of 2012 was performed in the Experimental Media and Performing Arts Center Concert Hall at RPI. With 600 audience members immersed in the reverberations of the simulated cistern, the celebration was joyous, and the audience had a brand new experience that made us all very happy.
Now we'll listen to an excerpt of the Deep Listening album, which was recorded in 1988 in an empty 3 million gallon cistern below Fort Worden, Washington. You're listening to Echolocation on WGXC, and that was an excerpt from Deep Listening, an album recorded in 1988 by Pauline Oliveros on accordion, Stuart Dempster on trombone, and vocalist, I hope I'm saying this right, Pani Atwa. Next, we'll take a few minutes to listen deeply to a really interesting combination of environmental sound and music that took place at the Wave Farm in Acre, New York last summer. Artist Zach Poth has installed a solar-paneled floating hydrophone array in the pond at the Wave Farm. Last summer, a duet featuring the underwater sounds from Pond Critters and the music of Jeffrey Leppendorf's Japanese flute was performed at the Wave Farm and streamed live online. So we'll listen to an excerpt of the 30-minute performance, and you can listen to the whole piece by visiting the Wave Farm archives at wavefarm.org.
Thank you.
We've come to the end of the premiere broadcast of Echolocation on WGXC and Wave Farm Radio. I'm your host, Elizabeth Lojudis, thanking you very much for listening in and tuning in to Echolocation. I want you to know that there's a song list and a list of references available to you if you'd like to look anything up yourself, and that's available on our Facebook page at facebook.com/echolocationWGXC, and that's ECHOLOCATION WGXA. And I would like to invite any comments that you may have on the show, or ideas for things to include on the show, or submissions of your own soundscape that you'd like to share with me for consideration for playing on future broadcasts of Echolocation. And we will be airing 4 times a year seasonally, so I hope you'll join me for my summer show, which will most likely be in August. And stay tuned, and we'll be updating the Facebook page with the actual broadcast date for the summer show. And during that show, we'll be delving deeper into bioacoustics and also exploring a musical genre that has been dubbed eco-music. It's music and sound art expressing environmental concern. So I'd like to just close the show by thanking Galen and Tom and everyone at Wave Farm and WGXC, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology Macaulay Library for many of the natural sounds that we heard tonight, Ted X and Pauline Oliveros for her talk on hearing versus listening, and especially all of you for listening in tonight. And we're going to go out with an evening sound walk that was recorded in Hanacroy, New York in mid-May 2016. Thanks so much for listening to Echolocation. This is Elizabeth Lojudis signing off.